Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is AGLCA Radio, and this is Beth McHugh, the Homeport crew. The rest of the Homeport crew is on shore leave today, so we're rebroadcasting one of our previous shows. So please don't call in, and we won't have a question of the week because this is a broadcast. Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everyone. This is Steve at AGLCA, and we've got our usual Homeport crew of Janice. Say hello, Janice.
Hey.
And Beth.
Hello.
And Roger.
Good morning.
And our guest today is Captain Sterling Kennedy.
Hi, boys and girls. How we doing?
And Sterling's going to talk on all the things that go wrong on a boat, which is, I think, just about everything. But he's got some specifics that we want to talk about. So the way he titled is, we're going to talk about things that will break, dent, scratch, or just plain go away, which should cover just about anything. As usual, we're encouraging people to call in with questions, and since this is a good topic that everybody seems to have some input on, you can call us toll-free at 877-497-1815. Love to hear from you. We've got plenty of room. So what are the most popular things that break and go wrong, Sterling?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I've done the loop twice now, and I think that the best way I can describe things that go wrong is cruising is very similar to fixing your boat in a very exotic place. I found that there's a list of things that I fixed, and I think what happens when you do the loop, you're used to using your boat on weekends once or twice a month, and all of a sudden you're using your boat every day. So you go from a 40-hour-a-year user to someone who's out there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, using your vessel and using all the systems on it, and things start to go because they're really, it's a tough load on them. One thing that I found is a pet peeve of mine, and me and Wes Green went around this a couple of times, is the bilge pumps they put out. I went through more bilge pumps. I think I went through 6 bilge pumps in 2 years. He's built for the built-in flow switches, and I've tried the kinds of the separate flow switches, and they just don't seem to last. So what I've found is really necessary for me is to have 3 systems on board of bilge pumps and at least 1, if not 2, extra standbys, because that's an item that usually seems to go bad one way or the other and fairly regularly.
What
that
size
is
bilge
a very
pumps?
True statement.
What size bilge pumps do you have?
Off the top of my head, I got a couple of 450s, I think, 500s, somewhere in that range. I don't remember the exact gallon per hour, actually. Pretty good size ones. And I have a couple of smaller ones that I put at a lower level, the automatic ones that run every 30 seconds. I put those in the very bottom of the bilge because they tend to suck out a little more water than the bigger pumps, get a little bit lower in level. So I have a total of 4. 3 loads hooked up and 4 on board total.
Yeah, we on No Sense, we did something similar, but whatever I do, I always get carried away with, can't do it the easy way. So we ended up putting in the same idea as you, where we had a 500 gallon per hour that sits on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then we mounted 4,000 gallon an hour at 2 different levels in the build. So by the time that third one goes off, you have a big hole in the boat, basically.
4,000 gallon, that's a pretty good size pump.
Yeah, that was more for flooding control if I ever put a hole in the bottom. But
Well, we have a thing around here that if your boat's going down, you stand up because our average depth runs about 5 or 6 feet. So.
Yeah. But Roger has an adventure with a bilge pump where whenever he puts it in the bilge, it doesn't work. But if he picks it up and holds it up over his head, it's okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I live on a sailboat, so I've got a 6-foot draft, and trying to get the bilge all the way to the bottom of the draft. I don't know if it's because it's below water level. I don't know what it is. But I've done the redundancy. I've got a 800 and a 1500 in there, and they both just won't work underneath the water level. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Is it a head loss thing or electrical thing? I mean, it's only a 6-foot head loss.
Again, it wouldn't be a problem. When I plug it in, if I'm holding it in my hand, above water level. It will pump and pump and pump just like it's supposed to. You know, like you have the automatic float in it,
mm-hmm.
where I'll flip it upside down and it'll run for 15 seconds. You know, it's got that extra suction on it. And then
right.
as soon as I put it down into the bilge, put water in it, it will suck it all out. It doesn't have a problem sucking the water out. It has a problem shutting off.
Oh. Well, I always tell people whenever they buy bilge pumps, they buy them from West Marine or any pump.
Yeah.
Anything electrical, get that warranty. They give you a five-year warranty for a few extra bucks. That's well worth it. And I just write it on top of whatever piece of equipment has it with a magic marker, so when it breaks, I know where to take it to get it fixed.
That's smart.
But I found that bilge pumps, water pumps for the water pressure system, they'll wear out on you. I would carry a spare one of those. Macerators, we use the head on our boat a lot, and it would go out. I'd say once a year we have to replace it. Not counting the maintenance on the thing.
What type of head system do you have? I'm using an Electrosan right now.
I have a vacuum flush.
Oh, okay. Do you like that?
It's okay. You know, I've never had a head I really was crazy about, you know. This is good.
Is there
as
a lot of maintenance involved in that?
Mine was a pretty good system. Boat is built where the macerator pump is right by the toilet, so that's what actually creates the vacuum, and it goes right into the holding tank, which is right near each other. So it's not a whole lot of hosing to clog up, and it's a pretty good system.
Very nice. One of the things that I've noticed about I've ended up giving myself a filter Friday. So I spend Fridays cleaning out all my systems.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I live on my boat. But just like you were saying,
oh, okay.
I mean, if you're a weekender, you know, if you're a weekender, you're only on the boat, like you said, 40 hours a year. But if you're on the boat 24/7, like you said, all the systems start to wear out pretty darn quick.
Oh, yeah. Sure. If you're living aboard, you're getting down there cleaning up that shower sub a couple times a year, too.
That's always
good. You get to live the night on a boat. That's always a fun thing to do.
That's absolutely right.
You know, you spend your whole life working, you finally retire, you go cruising, and now you're down there cleaning up shower sumps. Isn't that great?
That's exactly right. So what else, in your opinion, would go wrong on the cruise?
Batteries. For some reason, I've had more problem with batteries on the past three boats that I've had, and obviously it's me, I guess, but I go through batteries like people go through shoes. You know, they last me anywhere from 6 months to a year and a half, and that's about it.
Right, Erwin. Most time batteries last several years, don't they?
Yeah, I would think so, but I don't know if it's because I'm in Florida or what, but I just seem to have problems with batteries. And I just went through with my last boat, the 36-footer. I had two loops. I went through three of West Marine's charging systems, the newer ones, the three-bank chargers. It just failed. I've always had battery problems. I also pull a lot of 12-volt stuff, too. You know, I use a lot of smaller inverters, so I'm putting a load on the batteries.
Well, that was going to be my question. You anchor out a lot?
I anchor out. I didn't on the loop because I wanted the experience of marinas, quite honestly. We chose not to anchor out as much as we could have. Because we just found the sociability of going to marinas is a lot more fun than anchoring out normally.
Okay. Well, I was referencing that to the batteries, if you know.
Well, I run a lot, too, on a Honda. We have a Honda 2000. Every boat I've ever had a generator on board.
Uh-huh.
All right, now I've got a Northern Lights. But I use this little Honda all the time. In fact, I rig my boats up to where I can run on that Honda primarily all the time without having to plug in at anchor, and I really like that a lot. I'm using a gallon and a half of fuel gasoline a night, which is a lot cheaper than the marina, and they're quiet and they handle the load. They were pretty good.
Okay,
2000 I.
What size Honda was that again?
I use a 2000 I. Actually have two of them. If I need more power, I kind of system. You can hook them up together and get 4,000 watts and 30 amps. But right now, a 2000 is 2015 amps.
Now, can you push your AC with that?
I use a window unit, which people are going to laugh at, though. I have two marine airs on board, which I use when I plug in, but I have a window unit I use when it's hot and I'm an anchor for the cabin where I sleep in, a little 8,000 BTU, and it does the job.
Very nice.
That's why I go. I just got a new boat about 6 months ago, and we just set it up. It's an aft cabin with on the escape hatch on the back. We have a removable AC unit on there, so I can just go out and anchor and plug her in and run on that Honda.
Have you put that Honda on the deck somewhere? Or I'm sure
I put it on the very top of the. I put it on the very top of the aft deck cover, so far away from any openings in the boat that would be there. And I also have CO2 detectors on board, so.
Which well, the batteries, do you recommend maintenance-free batteries?
No.
Acid?
No, sir.
Gel?
I have Wetzel batteries. I would like to try some gel batteries, but I haven't done that yet because of the maintenance issue of water, which in Florida, I think especially water's a problem with batteries. You're always watering them. I mean, it's almost bi-weekly.
If you're interested in what I'm going to tell you next, we'll talk about it offline because I'm not going to plug somebody. But I had to replace the batteries on my boat, I don't know, a year ago. And on the recommendation of the person I work with here, he came up with an AGM battery that's half the size and half the weight of an 8D,
mm-hmm.
and has all the juice.
Yeah.
So and it's got I forget what the 5-year warranty or a 7-year warranty.
Oh.
So yeah, just I said I've only had them a year, so. We'll find out how good the warranty is if they break down. But if you're interested in that, we can talk about it offline.
Okay, yeah, I'd like that. They're basically no maintenance battery, I assume, right?
Yeah, yeah. The AGMs are one of the reasons I first went to AGMs is if you have a catastrophic situation, there's no battery acid to get all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
If anyone listening wants the information on what Steve bought, you can just email him at info@greatloop.org.
Yes, you can do that. But then what we ended up doing was the extra space we got back with those batteries turned into storage space for fuel filters.
So very nice.
Worked out good.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a problem with that system going down as well?
You talking to me?
System? Anybody?
What system?
The fuel system.
Oh, gosh.
Nice.
Even like filters?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just getting clogged up too bad because of sediment sitting in the tanks.
Yeah, but I kind of only do that when I'm really in a big body of open water far from shore. I hate to do that. I'm not going to even close the waterway.
Yeah, you don't want to be tied to the dock when your filter goes bad.
No. I did it off Cape Sable once on a twin-engine boat. Lost one engine, idled back, went down to fix that. The other engine died, turned on the generator so the batteries wouldn't die. The jet died. It was a rough day. I stirred up the tanks a lot, and all three of them died.
Oh, my.
Now I have the dual system on each engine that you switch from one filter to the other. And I bought this new little T-valve that has a memory gauge in it that you put on top of your filter. So when you go down to the engine room, with the engines off, it'll tell you how much vacuum you've got going on there if you need to change your filters without your engine being running. And that's kind of neat.
Yeah, well, I've got Raycores with the vacuum gauge on them.
Yeah.
And it's, but believe it or not, we put in a fuel polishing system. And I've never ever had the Raycores on the engine have never shown any vacuum. They never clogged. So I change those about once a year, and I've never had a fuel problem.
So you're polishing while you're running.
Yeah, and it's running on a timer where 4 hours a day when I'm not on the boat, it runs anyway.
Wow.
That's nice kind of thing.
But when you fuel up, odds on favorite is for the next 2 days, I'm going to be putting new fuel filters in the polishing system.
Yeah.
But that's better than the engine.
Yes, it is. It sure is. I hate that sound when that happens, when it all of a sudden it gets quiet.
Yep.
Go ahead,
Janice.
I was just wondering, you wanted to talk about hull scrapes. have you hit things on the bottom or come across any problems with your hull?
Oh, you mean like running aground?
Well, have you hit anything, you know, that would put a scrape on the hull?
Oh, once or twice.
Yes?
Yeah, sure, I have. I kind of operate on the boating system. It looks good at 200 feet. That's pretty good for me. I mean, you know, my boats are older boats. They're not new. They're not real shiny. You can't even wax them. They're so old. They're in the 80s, you know. The last one was a 77. But whenever I get a scratch, we'll fix it up. I had a painted hull before this one, and that was kind of a pain. But you're gonna ding your boat. I mean, it's just going to happen. No matter how hard you try, you're going to run aground. There's people that have run aground. There's people that lie about it. People do run aground, and people do run into dams and docks and locks, and it just happens. But it's part of it. You know, it's part of the experience.
I always figure if the boat hasn't got a lot of scrapes on it, it's not being used very much.
That's very true. You know, I got these guys down here that you see with the captain-run boats that are just immaculate. But then all the owner does is just jump on the boat and go fishing and come back, and then they spend the rest of the time he's gone cleaning and shining and fixing up.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But that's not the kind of boating we do.
What kind of dinghy do you have, Sterling?
What am I what?
What kind of dinghy do you have?
Well, I finally got rid of my J-14 Carolina skiff, which I actually towed that around the loop twice because I had nowhere to lift it up on the boat. So I put a little looper flag on it, actually, a little decal, because I towed that through all those locks. But in this new boat I just bought, new to me anyway, it's an 85 aft cabin marine trader. I put a set of davits on it, and I finally broke down and bought an inflatable boat, which is my first inflatable, actually. I've never had one before. Always had a hard body boat. And we're just rigging it up right now to see how it's going to work.
Your opinion on it when you've used it a bit. Steve and I don't have a dinghy, and I've been wanting one for a while, and we just seem to have a problem of where to store it while we're underway.
Yeah, it's a problem, and even if you get it, and I got a small 10-foot inflatable for West Marine, and it sounds like a small boat, and it's really small when you get in it, but when you go to store it somewhere,
it's huge.
The boat's 100 pounds, and the engine's 100 pounds, and then the gasoline's going to be another 30 pounds, so you got to invest a couple of grand in minimum and set it to davits. That's just the way of it, you know.
Yeah. We were thinking of keeping ours on the swim platform, but Steve's concerned about the weight again.
Well, I towed mine, and if I had it on the platform, if it was a rough day, I would probably take it off the platform and tow it. As for the weight, you know, you're going to have the weight. It's not an awful lot of it when you think about it. It's 300 pounds. It's like one big person standing back there, so it's not going to be a killer.
Uh-huh. How often do you use your dinghy? Do you go out a lot in it, or is it something you really don't need?
On the loop, we didn't use it a lot because we didn't anchor out much.
Uh-huh.
We used it to go exploring here and there, and that was well worth having it for, just exploring alone, you know, up the creeks and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But now that we're with our economy like it is, we're going to be anchoring out a lot more, and we'll be using the dinghy an awful lot.
Uh-huh.
So I would say now we'll be using it almost nearly every time, whereas in the past it was, you know, one in ten days we'd use it.
Did you know that we have a marine trader also?
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, ours is 79.
Wow. 79, that's great. As a, you know, back then they built them, I got an 85, but they built them back then, they're built like tanks.
Yeah.
You know, they made the fiberglass so thick.
Yeah, we've had to cut some holes in a couple of times for things like bilge pumps, and it's, it's, I don't know, a half an inch, three quarters of an inch thick when you cut that piece of fiberglass out of there.
Oh, yeah, I cut a hole in my deck in this half cabin boat, and put a hawser pipe in with the anchor, and it was a good 2 inches thick. It was amazing. It really built well.
How often do you have to replace your line, Sterling?
Well, I'm real conscious of fraying, and I found again on, I think it was on a Loop site, from someone put up that you take and get your piece of carpet and cut a slot in the middle of it, make it about 2 foot square, and you put that over the cleat when you got a, when you got any kind of chafing problem. My lines itself seem to last. I've never had one chafe on me that I'm aware of in recently. It's just been something I've been cautious of, and it's pretty easy to just keep an eye on what you're doing there. So it's not a regular problem. Going through the lock system, you'll do some chafing and fender repair there. I guarantee you that. We had a lot of scrapes and went on the fenders and lines, but nothing that was not fixable.
You had mentioned you do a lot of your own mechanical work.
Well, yeah, and that's not, I would prefer to hire some guy to do it. I'm unfortunately not the millionaire I always wanted to be. I fix 90% of my stuff myself, only because it's crazy expensive to hire a mechanic, which everyone in this club knows. It's you hire some guy for $100 an hour to come and change your bilge pump or change your macerator pump, and you can do it yourself, you're throwing away money. So, and I'm not saying mechanics are good. It's just that I personally find it real, real expensive to use them. They're kind of like lawyers to me. If they're out 8 hours, they're going to pay you travel time and all this. So it gets real expensive. I hope that didn't offend anybody, but you're going to get a bill from them, you know.
Pardon me? Where did you learn to do the maintenance?
Old school. I actually, when I first started in the boat business about 35 years ago, I knew very little about boats except to run them. And out of necessity, I'm not a mechanic by any stretch. I just learned things out of necessity and out of just having to fix it myself. Most of the time, as with most things, when you're working on a boat, it's not the actual fixing it. It's figuring out what's actually wrong. And once that's, once you know what's wrong or what's causing your problem, you can usually, most of the time, just fix it yourself or ask somebody on the docks, and you know how the loopers are. They'll all come help you.
Yep.
You know, if you ain't got the right tool, someone will have it for you.
So what else would you like to talk about?
Well, electrical, I wanted to mention shore power cords. I find that was kind of a problem I had. Of course, the last one I had running on 30-amp service instead of dual 50-amp, but I had a couple of times where plugs would actually melt on me on a hot day with the air conditioning, so I always carried extra ends for the shore power cords. And I think a lot of that problem is also, too, that the marinas have not the best electric hookups.
Yeah.
It can vary from marina to marina.
Well, you know, one of the things Janice and I laugh about is you'll go into this modern-looking, rebuilt in the last 3 years marina, and their power stinks.
Oh, yeah.
And you go into some marina that looks like nobody's done anything with it in 50 years and plug in and everything's fine.
Yep.
And we kind of had that experience over the summer. It was weird.
Yeah. You could probably melt a plug or two in your time, I would have said.
I would
you
think.
Know, you come back to your boat and it's dark, and that's probably what it is most of the time. That seems to be a good thing to carry as an extra one of those. And also this new tape, Magic Tape. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
That's the tape you stretch and it sticks to itself. They claim you can actually fix an exhaust pipe with that, which would be handy to have if you were in the middle of Lake Michigan or something and blew an exhaust pipe.
Yeah.
And I carry a ton of that on board. And they now make it in duct tape size, so that's a good thing to carry for most any kind of repair or for when you cut a line, securing the line so it doesn't fray. It's just good stuff.
What other mechanical parts do you carry, Sterling? I mean,
Can I interrupt?
Yes.
Can I interrupt, Janice? We actually have a caller.
Good.
Oh, go ahead,
yes,
caller.
Yes, his name is Larry, and he wants to ask Captain Kennedy about how he towed his dinghy around, so I'm going to put him on the air.
Okay.
Hey, Larry.
He's not on.
Hold on. Okay. Okay, Larry, you can go ahead.
Yes, I'm Larry Hayden. I'm getting ready to start the loop in June, and I'm kind of nervous about going through locks, and I'm hearing how you towed a dinghy around the loop twice.
Yeah.
What do you do with a dinghy? I mean, how hard is it to...
Well, I'll tell you, what I found to be the trick to that, the secret to that seemed to be I had a hard body dinghy with J14 Carolina skiff. Of course, you paint the bottom on it. But I had two floating lines running back to the dinghy, separate from each other. In case one would fray or break, I'd still have that extra line to get me back, both hooked up individually. And on the last 4 foot of that, I had, of each line, I had a piece of regular boat line that would stretch, because if you use that floating line by itself, it doesn't have any shock value to it. And I tied it from the port and starboard side of the transom on a V back behind the boat, probably 15 feet or more. And then I put on the front of the Carolina skiff a large bumper fender, and on the back of my trawler on the swim platform. We come into a lock or a dam or docking situation, I'd have the Admiral go down and pull the lines in to where the dinghy was right up against the transom, or the swim platform, rather, with the dinghy, with the fenders touching, and both lines tight. So basically, it was an extension of the boat at that point. You didn't have to worry about the lines, the props. So it wasn't impossible to do. If you go to my website, there's pictures of it on there.
Website is?
I don't have the address. If you do a web search for Sterling Lady, II, it'll come up. I mean, my web address is just really complicated, but just do a web search for Sterling Lady, III, the third, and it'll come up when I have pictures of the dinghy being towed, and you'll see the fender system on that. Did that explain it to you there, Larry?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Okay. Don't be afraid. It'll be fine.
Okay.
You'll also see a picture on that website of my dinghy floating in the middle of Lake Michigan where with a line frayed on me. So you want to check those tow lines every once in a while.
Sterling, have you filled in your website address in your profile on our page so other members can look at it?
Yeah, but it's a real long one. I don't have a sure name or nothing. It's very complicated. It's a homestead page, but... But I tell my friends is just look up Sterling Lady III, the third, and it usually pops up there.
Uh-huh.
You want to talk a little bit?
The last question I would have is, when would you give up and call a mechanic?
Well, I guess the answer to that would be when I don't have any other options left. And there are certain things you can't do. I don't do internal engine work, you know, like if a valve gets swallowed or a ring drops or, you know, a rod would go, that's well beyond my capability. You know,
uh-huh.
I can bolt stuff on and off. I can change pumps. I can use a 12-volt meter to usually find a problem with wiring. But that's as far as my expertise goes. You know, I mean, I don't do any internal work like that, rebuilding engines or whatnot. That would be where I would collect transmission or whatever I would call somebody.
Uh-huh.
What kind of major breakdowns have you had over the years, Sterling?
I've had about everyone I could think of to invent some. I've got some that are pretty embarrassing, actually. My worst one, just to show you, and I'm sure I'll hear about this, but I was coming back from Bimini, and I lost a cylinder. This was on a four-year-old Yanmar diesel. Lost a cylinder. And, Key Largo is 70 miles from Bimini. So I start heading back. I'd rather be broken down in Key Largo than Bimini. And I get about an hour later, I lose another cylinder. Now I'm down to two cylinders. I'm doing 4 miles an hour forward and 4 miles an hour north. And I called a friend of mine to come get me and tow me back in, which he luckily did. Long story short, I got home, went to work. I figured it was a fuel problem. It turned out to be the water. It somehow filled up with the engine had filled up with water through the turbo.
Hmm.
And And when I got back to work changing the filters out a month later, well, the five-year-old Zanmar became a block of solid lead. You know, it was all rusted together. So that was my worst breakdown. That was a $18,000 mistake.
Oh, my
God. The moral of that story is check your oil dipstick when you get home, no matter what. If it says more oil in there than you put in, you got a problem.
Did you say 18,000?
18,000, yeah. Brand new. I had to buy a brand new engine.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
that was a hit. You know, they say the lesson will repeat itself until the lesson is learned. Yeah, well, I learned that lesson.
We had a member last year or the year before was anchored up in Canada somewhere, and the way the tide was running, I forget exactly how it happened, but anyway, he had water back up his exhaust and into the engine. So the next morning he went to start the engine, all he got was a big thud.
Yeah, You bend a rod or what?
Well, he completely wrecked the engine. He had to go replace it. So,
wow.
But if you know,
I've
the boat
had that
was up,
happened over the years. It's a problem. It's a real problem.
But he went to he was pretty mechanically inclined. So he came and bought the engine, loaded it up on his pickup truck, and drove it back up to Canada.
Jeez.
And ended up working with a mechanic up there. But the two of them were able to get the engine swapped out.
Wow.
But that's the opposite side of your story is you know, 1,000 miles from home when that happens. And no engine parts anywhere nearby.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had engines on a couple of occasions fill up with water. The other time was on a friend of mine's boat we were riding out of storm in the Miami River. It was one of those tropical storms blowing through, and it blew water up the exhaust just like that.
Yeah.
In the morning we got it started and you hear roar. Immediately, because I'd been through this before, I pulled the dipstick out and there was more oil in than was supposed to be.
Yep.
So he got some of that water tester and put it on the dipstick, and it turned out to have water in the engine.
Yeah,
which sounds terrible, but it's not an awful thing, because if you actually loosen up your turbo or your injectors, and it'll come right out. You know, we did that, put marble mystery oil in it, and it was fine. Normally only one cylinder that fills up.
What else do we need to talk about?
Jeez, there's so many things you could fix and break on a boat. Basically, if you can do it yourself, do it yourself. You know, my best story about that is the gentleman in Canada was a guy on a 27-foot Sea Ray, traveling with some friends, and his water pump goes off his boat, and he hires a mechanic to come and fix his water pumping, you know, for the water system, the drinking water. Well, as we both know, that's an easy fix for anybody.
Yep.
The guy spent $400 to get it fixed.
Well,
he spent $400 to get a water pump replaced, and it could have been just a loose wire. So, you know, just get yourself an electrical tester and get yourself a little knowledge and bring every tool you got. And when you get on the dock, if you're a looper especially, you've got that flag flying, you'll get all kinds of help trying to figure out what's wrong, and you'll get it fixed.
Great.
Do you believe in redundancy? Yes, sir, especially on things like bilge pumps. Very much so, yes.
What?
Yeah, I have 3 GPSs on my boat.
There you go. That was one of the things that I was going to ask you about that we didn't touch on with the GPS system is navigational purposes, you know? I mean, I've got one that's built into the boat, I've got one down below, and I've got a handheld as well.
Yeah. Well, I just have 3 that I've had over the years. And what I did with one of them, which was pretty handy on the aft cabin, is I mounted it in the aft cabin for an anchor drag alarm, and it's pretty nice. It's nice to sleep with that, knowing that's on there back there where you can hear it.
Yeah, that's nice.
But I have the ones with all the charts in them, and then I never get all charts anymore. They're the best thing to have it. Boy, if you ever lose them, you want to have extras.
That's for sure. That is definitely for sure. Never go without the paper, that's for sure.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. We all got that big box of drawer chart somewhere.
Well, when we're cruising, Janice actually has the big charts out and follows along on them and makes sure that the that we understand what we're looking at. So.
Okay, we have another caller.
Oh, good.
His name is Tom, and he has a question for Captain Kennedy. Go ahead.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, good morning, Sterling. Great program. And you have a lot of experience with the loop, obviously. I was concerned or curious about theft. Many, you know, fly bridges are just enclosed with canvas and in the U.S. as well as the Bahamas, and I wonder if you have a comment on that. I'll take
Could you say that again for me, please?
Yeah. I was curious about theft, if you have experience during experience on in the Bahamas as well as the loop, and any comments you might have regarding, you know, unenclosed fly bridges and things that are left on deck that might be easy pickings.
Well, I always operate on the theory that a lock keeps an honest person honest. You know, if you're leaving the boat, even when I'm an anchor, even here in the Keys, I'll lock my boat up. It's just a habit to do. When I have stuff in a bridge, like my Honda generator, for example, I have that locked, chained to the boat. You know, and in Canada, when you go to those places where they say you untie your boat, they'll untie your boat for you at night. I had a cable to lock it up. I'm not overly concerned with it as far as thievery goes. I've never had a problem, but I've always kind of just kept things locked up.
Well, on the loop, in the discussion forum we have, in 5 or 6 years, there have been very few comments about stuff missing from boats. What Sterling talked about with people, kids mostly, on the loop, untying your boat at night because they think it's fun, we get a lot more reports of that than we do actually anything missing. In the Bahamas, the stories you hear are the dinghy will go missing if you don't cable it to the boat and lock it.
Another advantage of the Bahamas, too, is they know that Americans carry guns over there. So they don't mess with Americans too much. At least that's what I was told.
Okay. Thank you for your response.
You're welcome. Okay, where were we?
I think we're just about ready to close, Steve.
Yeah, that's where I was getting to. Sterling, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
All of the other people that are listening, the show will be archived at www.greatloop.org. So if you want to let your friends listen to it, you can go that way. And if you're listening and you're not a member, we'd love to have you. And at that same web address, you can sign up for membership and join our forums and all the other stuff that we do. And then finally, next week, we're going to have captains, Chris and Elise Caldwell, who were liverboards for years and years and years. And they're going to talk about cruising Florida's Treasure Coast, which is from Palm Beach to Titusville.
Can I interrupt?
Be a good show. Yes.
We do have one more caller. Can we keep Captain Kennedy just for a minute and take the caller? Okay, hold on.
You there?
Well, she's talking to the guy now, so.
Yeah, okay.
That would be my first dead air experience there, right?
I had to say something.
That's like when the diesel dies, and all of a sudden the boat's quiet. Same kind of thing.
Okay, we have our caller on the air.
Who is?
Oh. Yeah, hi, this is Hal. We just finished the loop, did it for a couple of years, and had probably the typical number of breakdowns and things to fix. And one of the things that impressed us along the way is the folks that you run into on the loop. I mean, if you show up on the deck with a wrench in your hand, you've got people coming down the dock saying, "What can I do to help?" You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, we've got spare parts. We had to replace a water pump on the front of our layman in Canada, just before we started the Trent Severn. And it was amazing. We've got a marine trader with a layman in there, and it started leaking, and we got American diesel to ship one to Canada overnight for a very reasonable price. And then in changing it out, one of the bolts stripped, and lo and behold, there was another boat traveling with us that had a tap and die set and another boat that we ran into. The guy said, well, I found some spare bolts rolling around in the engine room. See if this works. And between the three of us, we were up and running in no time at all.
Yeah.
That sounds very typical, doesn't it? I've heard this story a lot.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's the magic of that flag. You know, it's the only organization I've ever known of or even heard of, this Looper organization, that it's such an amazingly friendly group of people that are just bend over backwards to help you.
Well, you're right.
I mean, you've all experienced somebody knocks on your boat, oh, you're a Looper, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and the value of the flag can't be diminished. When we started, we didn't fly the flag because we were a little, you know, we thought, well, we're going to try the loop. And we left Tennessee and got to Florida and anchored with some people, and they said, fly that flag. Put that flag on your boat. And that was the best advice we got on the loop.
I have the platinum flag, and I don't fly it as much as I fly the white flag or the gold flag because it's not recognized as much.
You're right. Yeah.
So I'll fly the white one and the gold one.
We saw a few people with platinum flags, and to tell you the truth, that was kind of intimidating. they were like the grand gurus, and we were afraid to approach them.
Oh no! I just need you. I got less sense than most people. I've done it twice.
Well, we proudly fly the gold one now.
Well, heck yeah, you earned it. I'm telling you what, that's a very exclusive club.
We also pulled into Titusville. You were talking about one evening and turned the layman off, hit the button, and she didn't shut down. And
oh yeah,
I thought, oh my Lord, it was like on a Friday afternoon. I thought, well, we're gonna have to sit here until we run out of fuel, and. I kept punching the stop button and a quick call again to American Diesel. Sounds like I'm shilling for them, but I'm not. He said, "Well, go down," and told me how to trip the solenoid on the engine.
Yep.
And again, next thing you know, 10 o'clock in the next morning, we had a new solenoid sitting waiting for us at Titusville.
Yeah, that's their reputation.
Job. He's a good company.
Yeah, well, Bob has good backup by Brian too.
If I had my choice in engines in a boat, I'd have Lehman's. I wouldn't have Perkins like I got.
Well, and you
Lehman's
talked
you can get parts anywhere.
Yeah, you talked about hydrolocking too. We did that one time. We didn't know what in the world it was. Had too many people on the back of the boat, and the current was wrong, and tried to start it the next morning, and I was wrestled, and finally figured out what it was again with some advice from some people. And just turned, you know, I think we pulled the manifold off and hand cranked it a number of times, changed the oil a few times, and that was about 1,000 hours ago, and she's still running.
Oh yeah, I don't think it hurts so much. I don't know, but I've had it happen to me, and I've had it happen to other people, and they've been fine with it. So
yeah, well we put an anti-siphon loop in it, so we're past that now.
You know, whoever gets these boats after we're all done with them, like the next generation of boaters, they're going to have some great cruising boats because everything's going to be fixed.
You're right. We put a new generator on at Dog River, and we put a new refrigerator on at Atlantic Yacht Basin. And, you know, by the time we finished the loop, it was just the way we liked it.
Yeah, ours, now you're going to sell it,
ours,
right?
Ours is a 76 Marine Trader. No, I don't think we can.
Do you live in Florida?
No, we're in Tennessee.
Because in Florida, if you have a boat that's 30 years old, it becomes an antique, and the registration is like $6 a year.
Really?
You might check that in Tennessee.
I might, yeah.
Yeah, 30 years old.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well,
always remember that if your car ran like your boat, you'd be riding a horse. That's